Hi, folks. Jack Spirko here. Today you are listening to an episode of TSP Rewind. Commercial-free versions of past episodes. Podcast blasts from the past. I put these up when I can't do a show due to professional commitments or rare vacations. These podcasts will appear in standard iTunes, Stitcher, and other feeds, but will be titled TSP Rewind episodes and numbered accordingly. And today, folks, we are rewinding back to February the 12th, 2010. So right at, I mean, just a couple days away from 14 years ago. And this was originally episode 377, The Why Behind Concealed Carry. This was a great episode. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. Before I do, I want to just let you guys know why you're getting a rewind today. I'm not out fishing or something like that. I agreed to do an episode of the Citizen Podcast today as an interviewee. So I'm going to be the guy getting interviewed. And it's the only time we could make work with the scheduling that we both had was noon today. Noon is right when I'm usually doing my show. It's certainly right in the middle of the day. It's pretty disruptive. So I just decided I would do an interview show, or I'm sorry, a rewind show for you guys today. I actually found this episode while I was going in and compiling all the episodes of Friday Flashbacks. At the beginning of the show, interviews were not something we did every week. So I had to, like, for the first, you know, year and a half of interviews, I had to kind of, like, go through the shows one at a time to find them to make the list. And as I was doing that, I would come along certain episodes. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. And this is one of those great old blast from the past episodes. There's a lot of discussion in the prepper community and the liberty community in America as a whole, honestly, about concealed carry. And the fact that it's a right and that we should exercise our rights and that it works. What we don't actually talk about a lot is the real whys behind it beyond, hey, if somebody tries to hurt me, I can defend myself. There's a lot more to it than that. And I want to hit on something that got discussed in this episode that one person who's, I'm going to say, probably was one of God's special children, took exception to. I don't know where the timestamp will come up in it at this point, because by cutting the front off and adding a new intro to it, that will change everything. But about 36-ish minutes into this show, I said that as a concealed carry holder, I feel that it is my responsibility to defend others, right? That if something goes down in front of me, I have a responsibility to defend others. This special child who called himself CVT said that I am not legally required to do so. I never said that, and we had a little bit of a discussion in the comments. If you want to go back to the original episode, you can read them, where he said, no, you did. And like I said, my responsibility versus I am required to are entirely different things. I have a lot of responsibilities, and most responsibilities are things that maybe other people share my opinion that we should see them as responsibilities, but in the end, they're self-imposed, or they're imposed by some level of authority from a standpoint of, like, I would tell my grandson he has a responsibility to do his chores. He doesn't have a legal requirement. He doesn't have a legal requirement to do his chores, right? He doesn't have a legal requirement when he becomes 18 years old and a man to go out and get a job, but I think he has a responsibility as a mature adult to see to his own needs. That's a responsibility versus a requirement. So, you know, I never say in this that you're required to do anything, but I do want to hit on this a little bit since one special person took exception to it all the way back then. Maybe somebody would today. There is a big difference between something that is legally required of you and a duty or a responsibility that you are bound to with honor. And when guns come into this, it's an even bigger deal. So there is no legal requirement, for instance, in the state of Texas that says I am required to lock my guns up when they're not in use and separate ammunition from them. But I don't leave loaded guns laying around, and you shouldn't either. That's a responsibility, not a requirement. In some places, it is a requirement as far as legality goes, but it's a responsibility. I've said that every right we have, and I've said this from the very beginning of the show back in 08 when I started, that we always have rights and responsibilities that go together. And people have always taken it, said, I'm not legally required. No one said that you were, dumbass. I mean, really, bluntly, like, can you imagine? We're having this discussion. And the reason I bring it up is not to just rehash an argument from, you know, 14 years ago or whatever, right? It's because literally I've had this discussion over and over and over with members of this audience that, again, are usually the special children of the world, that you have to have this conversation. Just because the law doesn't say I have to do something doesn't mean I don't have a responsibility to it. And there's two kinds of people. There's people that understand that and people that claim they don't so that they can abdicate responsibility. Here's what I mean. If I see a person drowning and there's anything I can do at all to potentially prevent that person from drowning, I believe 100% I have a moral, ethical responsibility to do so. If you don't, you're a piece of shit. That's how I feel about you. If you would let a person drown, and I'm not saying that you have to swim out into an undertow and risk your own life. That is a different level of being willing to risk for another person. Person's drowning, and there's a rope there, and you could throw it to him, and you don't. I think you're fucking responsible when that person goes down for the last time and dies. And I think you're a human piece of shit. There might not be a law wherever that occurred that would put you in prison and prosecute you for it. I still think you're a filthy piece of shit of a human being because you didn't do something to help another life when you could. And some dumbass is going to come comment on this episode and say, what if it was Osama bin Laden? What if it was, insert Adolf Hitler reincarnated. Okay, quit being stupid. Quit looking for a way out of what you have as a moral responsibility, or admit, I have no moral responsibilities to anybody but myself. So with that in mind, as you're listening to this episode, my point in bringing that up, and I will cover this in the episode when you hear the rewind here in a moment, it is highly possible that you could be an armed citizen sitting in a restaurant, for instance, and some person who's decided they want to kill as many as people as possible walks in, and the first person they shoot is you. It doesn't matter that you're armed, now you're dead. Or you're incapacitated with injury where you cannot return fire. This is very, very possible. You could be on your way to your car, and if I'm a bad guy, and I don't care about taking your life because I want what you have, I don't care if you have 12 guns on you. If I walk up behind you and shoot you in the back of the head, you go to the ground into a pile of blood, and I take your shit. Honestly, you can be armed with a gun. I can walk up behind you with a ball-peen hammer and hit you right where your head joins your neck, and you're dead from a ball-peen hammer that was completely quiet. And it is, and this is not anti-gun. Of course, the anti-gun people try to say this shit. Like, they set up these scenarios. I'll even talk about one, so I'll let it go in this episode. But they set up these scenarios where the guy with the gun gets taken out first. And it is in this where they, NBC or somebody did this bullshit where they told the guy pretending to be the bad guy with like an airsoft gun, that's the good guy in advance, and the good guy doesn't know who the bad guy is. And they stack the deck, so to say. But that doesn't mean it can't happen. If you happen to be the first person I pick to shoot and I'm the bad guy, then the fact that your arm will not mean much if my shots are on mark when I fire my first shots. Okay? However, if I am anywhere where, let's say, an active shooter shows up and that active shooter is focused on somebody else, I am in an ideal position to intervene. I'm in an ideal position to intervene. And if I choose not to, yes, I have walked away from what I consider a responsibility of an armed citizen. A responsibility, not a legal requirement. And if you cannot discern the difference between those two things, then this is what I suggest for you to do right now. Turn this episode off. Go find somebody else to listen to. When I read this, when I pulled this up today, I read this, I realized that there are people that actually think like this person does. Me, and I cannot help that person. I cannot help the person that thinks this way. It is impossible for me to do. Because this entire episode is called what? The why behind concealed carry. And the why is more in my feeling of duty and responsibility and ethics and honor for others than for myself. And I believe that the vast majority of people in this audience, whether they carry or not, feel the same way. It is one of the common bonds and ideals of the TSP community, which is now in its 16th year almost. We will be at 16 years in June. 16 years of doing this. And so if you heard what I just said, and it kind of like, man, he really is a dick sometimes. Yes, I am. Yes, I am, because this is how I feel about my community. I want it to be large, and yet I want it to be exclusive. I do not want people with shitty morals being part of the Survival Podcast community. And I believe in self pruning of that. I don't have to tell you you're not allowed. I have to tell you, if you're like this, you're not welcome. And sooner or later, you'll go find someone else to be. And we need to start cultivating that into our lives as a whole. If you live, you don't have to say, I am this particular form of, you know, religion or sect or, you know, I believe these 10 things. If you live a morally upright life, like will attract like, in the words of Richard Bach, and you will build people around you like that. And people that are morally reprehensible, essentially over time, they will prune themselves. Again, I'm not a religious person, but darkness is afraid of and abhorred by the light. Darkness does not understand the light, and light destroys darkness. The why that we carry is because there is darkness in the world. And those of us who live in the light, it is up to us not to just defend ourselves and our family, but those around us who are weaker and cannot defend themselves. And I would hope that someone would do the same for us, because as I said, if I come in and I target you, it doesn't matter that you're armed if I target you. But maybe someone else who also took that same step to be armed, who acts quickly, maybe it's not fast enough to prevent you from being wounded, but it may preserve your life. And one day you'll go home to your wife and kids again. And if you're not willing to take that step, I don't know what you're doing here. Anyway, with that in mind, let's rewind back. February the 12th, 2010, originally episode 377, The Why Behind Concealed Carry.
All right, speaking of karma, and speaking of people that have negative karma coming to them, bad guys that would try to do harm to a person happens to be exercising their right to keep and bear arms and carrying on their person in a place where it's still free enough to do so and getting a bullet in the head for doing that, let's switch into the main topic of today's show, concealed carry and why you should carry. Let's start out with the main reason that I think if you live in a state that still has enough freedom in it, you should go out and get a permit, a license, whatever they call it in your state, and the training necessary and everything you need to do so you are legally allowed to take a gun, strap it to your back, and go anywhere you want with it, within reason. And by the way, I don't think there should be a within reason to that. I think you should be able to carry. If you're carrying concealed, there is nowhere you should not be able to go with that weapon if you are a licensed concealed carry person. Period. Unless you're going to a secured building or something like that. Still, there's very few instances where I even get why you would disarm the honest person. But I guess there's places for full security and only, you know, what have you. But 99% of the time is what I'm talking about. Main reason I think you should do that is not because tomorrow, when you're walking down the street, somebody could come up and try to do you harm. The main reason I think you should do it is because it's our fundamental constitutional right in this nation to be able to do that. And I want you to think back to when you were a little kid in grade school and they first started teaching you about voting. And they said, when you grow up, when you become big boys and girls, when you become young men and women, it's very important for you to go out and register to vote. And it's very important that every time it's the time to vote comes around, that you as a young person go out and vote, cast your voice. Of course, it came from a very liberal school that was telling you who to vote for subversively, most likely. Or if you went to a private school, it might have been telling you to vote for the other way. But one way or another, one thing they had was right. And the one thing they had that was right was, if you don't vote, it threatens your right to vote. That when you have a right, the only way to ensure that it remains your right is for it to be exercised. Just like a muscle. If we don't exercise a muscle, if we lay in the bed for a year without moving, our muscles start to atrophy. And they lose their power. Well, that's what happens to rights when they're not exercised. And there has been a continuous creeping attack against the right to own and keep and bear arms in this country since the country was founded. Let me explain something to you that I think is fundamentally important for every American to understand. The Bill of Rights did not come with the Constitution. The Constitution was written, it was drafted, it was ratified, it was put in place. Ah, we have a Constitution. Some of our more enlightened founders backed up and went, we have a hole. We have a hole. There are things that we need to make sure never happened to the people that just fought for their freedom to create this new country. And some of our other founders, who were quite enlightened men as well, said, what do you want to do? And, you know, the Jeffersonians said, hey, we want a Bill of Rights. We want to put some amendments to this Constitution. Remember, when we set it up, we left it open to amendments. So let's do some amending. Say, hey, we just did this thing. We don't need to be jacking with it already. And look, we need to do this because we need to make sure that people, you know, have a right to not have soldiers quartered in their property. And we say that that's outdated and archaic. Hey, we talk about the shit hitting the fan here. You don't think the government will start putting soldiers, displacing people to house soldiers? If we have to deploy our soldiers throughout this country where there's no barracks for them? Right? Well, they can't as long as they follow the Constitution for now anyway, right? The people have to have the right to free speech and free press. Someone accused has to have the right not to be compelled to speak against themselves. People that own firearms need to make sure that they have a right to continue to own firearms. And what was said by the opposition to the Bill of Rights wasn't, oh, we want to take those rights away. No. What was said is, of course people have those rights. They're inalienable. We don't want to do this because if we don't put something into this Bill of Rights, in the future, people will look back and say, hey, look, it's not in there, therefore the government can interfere with it. And the Jeffersonian mind said, you know what, you're correct, it probably will happen, so let's do the best job we can to protect all of the rights that we can think of right now, because if we don't put this in there, they're going to do the same thing, and eventually the republic will fall into a tyranny. And fortunately for us, the Bill of Rights came out of that. Why did I just spend all that time we're supposed to be talking about concealed carry? Because I want you to understand something so fundamental that you will never hear come out of a history teacher's mouth in our public education system, for that matter, probably our private education system. What that means is every single component of the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, restricting the federal government's power, the negative liberties, as they're called by Barack Obama. In other words, the Constitution says what the government is not allowed to do to you, but it doesn't tell the government what it must do for you. He's absolutely right, and it should be that way. But every single one of those negative liberties was only there because your founders of your nation already saw an emerging threat. That means that our right to keep and bear arms was under threat before the Second Amendment was even drafted. The only thing you would put into the Bill of Rights was the something that we already perceived a threat to. So again, when our men in the Revolutionary War were out with their muskets and their flintlocks, right, and their Kentucky and Pennsylvania rifles fighting the Revolutionary War, it wasn't protect the Second Amendment. There wasn't one. What's the Constitution? It's important that you understand that. It's important that you understand that your right to keep and bear arms has been threatened for longer than our nation has officially existed. So, that compels you as a citizen to exercise that right. And to exercise that right in every logical, rational, legal way possible. Which means carrying concealed. Because restrictions on concealed carry are relatively new, folks. It wasn't that long ago that the Second Amendment was the Second Amendment was the Second Amendment. Right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed meant shall not. See, shall in legal language is a definitive word. It is an absolute word. There's a reason it was chosen. Shall not means will not ever under any circumstances know the end done. So that's one of the biggest reasons I can give you for going out and getting a permit or a license, like I said, depending on what state you live in, what they call it, so that you can carry is to prevent that additional restriction from being applied to your state. A state with a million law-abiding citizens license to carry concealed, not committing crimes, it's almost impossible to change the law and take that right away. A state with 10,000 people doing that is actually relatively easy, because even in our smallest, most leastly populated states, 10,000 is a meaningless number. Stand up and be counted. And those of you, well, if I had a concealed permit, then they'll know I have a gun, and they ever round them up. They already know you have a gun. Right? If they ever decide to round them up, they're going to go check everywhere anyway. And at that point, I'm with Charlton Heston from my cold dead hands. Looking at it a little bit more than just a rights issue. There's a fundamental reality that no matter how tough you are, whether you're a little bitty woman or a great big man, you can be a martial arts expert. You could be like the ass clown that posted on the blog we talked about yesterday. I'm a mountain biking champion, pilot, electrical contractor, taekwondo, mixed martial arts. You can be that guy, even though I don't think he was. Right? You can be that guy. And you still are threatened every day that you walk around. And there's still a limit to what you're able to do in a situation. The big misconception that people have is the reason you carry concealed is to self-defense, to protect yourself. In many instances where you would be threatened as an individual, and this is important because it's what the antis use to discredit the need for concealed carry. If you're walking down the street and somebody means to do you harm and rob you, walks up behind you, plants a knife in your back, rips your insides open, and pulls your wallet out, your gun doesn't do you a lot of good. I hate to put it that way, but that's reality. If you end up in a situation somewhere where someone draws a gun on you and you have your gun behind your back, if that person has any competency with a weapon whatsoever, being able to actually draw your gun and return fire before you're shot is all but impossible. Person standing arm's length from you with a large sharp knife and you have a gun holstered has a definitive advantage on you if they have any competency with that knife. In many instances, the self-defense thing doesn't quite work out. In many instances, it does. You know, a couple guys that are tough guys are going to come and just rob you with a physical altercation because they're bigger and tougher than you. You have an equalizer. If you can retreat back from the situation in any way, give yourself some space, use some self-defense techniques outside of the weapon, and give yourself time to draw the weapon, you alter a lot of situations. But there are limits to what that is. The main reason you carry is to protect others. Let me say that again. The main reason that you should carry is to protect others, to be the defender in the situation, so that if you are ever in a situation where some madman walks into a church or a restaurant or a school, starts shooting, unless you're the first person he shoots, wrong day for him to decide to do that. So if you're ever in a situation where you come by somebody forcing themselves on a woman in a dark alley or any other situation like that, you have the ability as a standoff person to correct that situation really, really quickly. The guy that's walking around carrying the weapon is out there. If you're not, he's defending you. It's civilian law enforcement. It's a person that's made a pledge. I will not use this weapon to commit a crime, but I will not allow criminal activity and harm to come to my fellow Americans in front of me without taking steps to prevent it. It is one of the most patriotic duties that you can do. It is not without expense. It is not without risk. But that's why you should do it. The next thing I want to tell you is it will change you as a person. People that carry weapons are more, not less, polite in potential altercation situations. When I was a young hothead, not pothead, hothead, and somebody would just say something to me the wrong way, especially right after I got out of the military and I had that airborne fighting spirit in me, I'm better than everybody else, that attitude, before I knew how dangerous that attitude was. If somebody would get into a position with me where they wanted an altercation, well, by God, they were going to get one. I'll show you. What did you say? Well, come on then, right? Those are common attitudes to have at that point in your life. Very dangerous attitudes. Very, very dangerous attitudes. Well, something happens when you take a course. You understand the legal ramifications of the use of deadly force. And you understand that in any type of altercation, it is up to you and your responsibility as being armed to do everything you can to defuse the situation. And when you end up in a situation like that in the future, you find yourself compelled not to engage, but to disengage from the situation. Because you now have a greater responsibility. That's huge. Somebody cuts you off in the car and gives you the finger, you're a lot less likely to run up on them and give them the finger back if you're armed. Because if they try to attack you and you shoot them, you've caused the situation to occur that way. Now the other side of it, your confidence level becomes extreme. It goes through the roof. Because for the first time in your life, you realize that no matter how big and tough any other opponent might be, even if there's more of them than you, you're walking around with a true equalizer. And for women, I want you to understand this. Do you know how many rapes there are in this country a year? This figure comes from the FBI. 2003, 93,000 rapes, roughly. 93,883. 2004, 94,635. Now, what you really have to understand about that, that's the reported number. It's the reported number. Many women see that as a shame. They don't report it. I guarantee you can double that number. Call it 200,000 women a year raped in this country. It's disgusting. It's revolting. It should make you sick. But it always makes me think of a lady that right after Florida became one of the first states to allow concealed carry, was carrying a 25 automatic. And a guy tried to rape her. And this guy was a serial rapist. He had raped four other women. And he managed to force her to a floor in kind of a back where she worked for like nights at a restaurant or something like that, or a warehouse or something. And he forced her to the floor, and she feigned compliance. And while he was trying to get on with what he planned on doing, she went from a feigned compliance to withdrawing her 25, pressed it to his forehead between his eyes, and pulled the trigger. And because it was only a 25 automatic, he had a bad day. He stopped doing what he was doing, and he became incapacitated, and she dialed 911, and the police came and took him away. But he was basically placed into a semi-vegetative state for the rest of his life from the damage done, but he didn't die. And she was asked, later in life, do you have any regrets? Her response, I wish my boyfriend would have bought me a .38. Meaning, because then I would have blew his head off. Now, remember what I said, you don't carry to defend yourself, you carry to defend others. Women, I'm calling on you to serve in that capacity today. Not so much because of the non-self-defense issue, because in this instance, this is the biggest threat the women have today, is being raped, as far as violent crime goes. It's true, and there's scumbags out there that'll do it. You have a unique opportunity, women of America, to get that permit, to learn how to use it, to develop the confidence that comes with it, to someday, if it ever happens to you, be the person that feigns compliance yourself and puts a bullet in a scumbag's head. And you haven't just defended yourself. You've defended every other woman in this nation, including, if you're a mother, your daughters. Including, if you have sisters, your sisters. Nieces, nephews, or niece-nephews. Well, maybe that too, because there's really twisted people out there. But you've defended every woman in America every time a rapist gets a bullet in the head. Do you know why? Not just because he won't go do it again. Because all of a sudden, what's perceived, and I hate to say this, what's perceived as an easy crime to perpetrate today starts to look like a very dangerous crime to perpetrate. Women, you should carry more than men should. You're more likely to be a victim of a violent act. You see, it might be wrong, ethically, morally, and it might be wrong even logistically. Because I don't want to fight with a woman trying to defend her kids. That's the mother bear syndrome, and that sucks. I've said it before, you don't think that's the way it works. Go out in the middle of the Angolan desert, find a tribeswoman and try to take her baby away. You'll end up with buzzards picking your bones, folks. But you're still more likely to be targeted, whether or not it's justified. So you're more likely to have a necessary need for a means of defense. And I'm telling you, if as few as 10% of those women, those 94,000 women raped in 2004, 10% had popped somebody in the head, that would have been 10,000 dead rapists, roughly. And I bet you the 2005 rape statistic would have went down. So if you're a woman, that's why you should carry. Let's talk about something else I've talked about in the past that people don't understand and seem to have a problem with, even people that carry themselves. I talk about carrying your gun, concealed or otherwise, in your home and on your own property. Of course you should do that. You're sitting at home, it's late at night, midnight, 11:30, you're up late watching Discovery Channel or something. Wife's cuddled up next to you on the couch, kids are off in bed asleep. Somebody kicks down your door, comes through your window. Some way or another threatens you. Your gun's upstairs under your mattress or in a gun safe. Hold on, bad guy, please. Could you please excuse me while I go get the gun? How many times have we heard even stories of where people were successful at, I went and got my gun? Life-threatening situations, you don't have time to go get your gun. Now, I want you to think about the irrational behavior that people see as rational. I get up in the morning and I'm going to go out about my day. Put all my stuff on, including my weapon as part of my wardrobe. I walk out my door, I get into my car, and I go spend my entire day doing whatever I'm going to do. I come home, and I'm going to be out for another 6 hours before I go to bed. And then I disarm, and I put that weapon away. First of all, people say, well, what about safety? The safest place your weapon could be is on your person, holstered under your control. The potential for someone to get their hands on your weapon and use it inappropriately increases with every step away from it that you take. So if it's upstairs in a nightstand, then a kid can walk in there and pull it out. Then a cat burglar can get in and find it while he's ransacking your bedroom. You know, I've listened to some of the best cat burglars in the business after they get caught and they get to their community service thing where they have to go out and tell people how they do it. You know what they do? They break into houses during the daytime when people are home. They case the house. They make sure it's got the type of stuff they want. They know the most valuable things ever will be in the master bedroom. They wait for an opportunity. They slip into the house. They go into the master bedroom. They immediately lock the door. That way, if the homeowner, husband, or wife tries to come in, they get alarmed and alerted. And most people don't walk around with a key to get into their master bedroom. Most of those locks don't even use a key. They're little push-button types. You can pick them with real easy with like a straightened-out coat hanger. Well, what happens is, wife yells, honey, are you in there? Did you lock the door? And then from downstairs or around the corner, he goes, oh, I'm not in the bedroom. I'm over here. They sit there and argue with each other about who locked the door while the guy goes out the window. And if they don't catch him, you know, that never happens, he still goes out the window. Well, if you disarm, you keep your gun in your bedroom, you just put it into the hands of a criminal in that scenario. Or, if you do catch him, and you get into your bedroom, he's got your gun and he's armed and you're not. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that you're already wearing your weapon and then you take it off. It's not about paranoia. It's about when I get undressed and I'm ready to go to bed, take my gun off. And then it'll be close to me where I can procure it quickly if I need to. But when I'm walking around cooking steaks in my backyard, part of my responsibility of being a concealed weapons carrier is to protect my neighbor. Somebody breaks into his home, oh, please, should you wait there while I go? You have to think about this. And I know there's some international listeners that live in nations where your gun rights are extremely restricted, if non-existent. And then the thought of actually carrying a gun in your home really seems out there. But think about it if you were carrying all the time anyway. And let's pause for a second. Let's go back to the confidence issue, because I don't feel like I did that justice. I think that the person that's armed, again, legally, sanely, rationally, has a different viewpoint in life. Remember what I've told you over and over and over about this show. Even though we talk about some scary things, and we talk about disasters, and we talk about things that a lot of people, frankly, don't even want to think about, we get accused in the survivalist community about being fear-mongers and, you know, overreacting to things. But what I've always said is, what we do is absolutely not about fear. It's about the abolishment of fear. It's about confidence. It's about an understanding and a knowledge that I can deal with what comes my way. The bad stuff happens sometimes, and there's nothing we can do to prevent the occasional bad thing from happening. But what we can do is we can be prepared to deal with it. And developing that mindset to where we behave calmly and rationally in all situations, knowing that we're better suited to deal with it. Well, what could be more the case with that than being armed and properly trained on how to use a weapon? You know, it was CBS or NBC or whoever does like the 2020 show or whatever did this show called Guns in America or something a while ago. And they took these people with no training and they gave them like airsoft guns or paintball guns or what have you and said, okay, you're going to go into this scenario. You're in a classroom. A guy comes in and starts shooting. And then somebody came in and started shooting and they like the person they had given the gun to never won. They always ended up getting shot themselves. Well, they put that person at like a tremendous disadvantage. First of all, they had no training. They were just handed the gun, basically told how it works. The person coming in was well-trained. So he had a well-trained shooter and an untrained defender. And the shooter knew who the armed person is. Folks, there could be nothing more stacking the deck against you than that. That's total crap. And, of course, they angled it that way because they wanted the... See, the thing is, when you're running a trial, if you want results to come out a certain way, if you don't follow this little thing that they came up to prevent that called the scientific method with control groups, then you know what? You could make the results come out any way you want to. Global warming, right? All the scientific evidence, right? You don't follow a scientific method, there is no evidence. There's only hyperbole. So that's what they did in this situation. Now, you take the situation another way. Person knows the rules of engagement, knows their weapon intimately, has a heightened state of situational awareness, has a heightened state of confidence, has been through training of what to do in the situation, is a blank face in the crowd, now send that shooter into that scenario. And unless he gets lucky and wins the lottery, and picks the right person first, he's dead. He's dead every time. Because that person only has one person to target the threat. And all they have to do is take cover and or concealment and return fire. And they have the superior odds at that point. As long, again, if they just didn't happen to be... If the guy walks in, doesn't appear to be a threat, draws fires, and it happens to be the guy that was armed, but let's change that. Let's change that to a world where 1 in 10 Americans have the courage and the sense of duty and responsibility to concealed carry. Now the guy walks into a crowded room with 100 people in it. He pulls a gun. Even if he gets lucky with the first one he pulls the gun on, 9 other people are putting bullets at him. And I don't want this to sound like Hollywood or a joke. I don't want you to even laugh. I know that this is, there's some comedy in that, but I'm being serious today. 10% of Americans armed at all times, and crime is screwed. Being a criminal takes on a totally different sense of, I don't know how to put this. It's much more difficult to be a criminal. It becomes a much more dangerous job. I also listened to a 2020 thing. It was done by John Stossel, who has a brain and thinks logically. And he went into some of the worst prisons in the state of New Jersey. And he interviewed hardcore criminals. And he said to them, "What are you afraid of?" And they said, "What do you mean, man? They're big tough guys. I'm not afraid of anything. You know? It's hard in here," but they said, "No, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm talking about on the outside. What are you afraid of?" And they didn't really follow me and say, "Look, here's what I want to point out. If you're committing a crime, are you afraid of a cop?" And the guy said, "All of them." "Oh, no, they don't shoot you. They tell you to get down. And you can either decide to run, if you think you can get away, or if you know you're caught, you just lay down, and they'll arrest you, take you to jail, and, you know, sometimes you can get bail and all, maybe you can skip out." Because these guys are in for 20 years. They have nothing to lose. They're going to be honest. "So you're not afraid of police officers?" "No, I'm afraid of getting caught, but I'm not afraid of them." "Okay." And he'd say, "Well, what about breaking into the house, breaking into a home, and the homeowner is armed?" "Oh, hell yeah, I don't want to do that. Yeah, I'm afraid of that. I'm scared of that. No, I don't want no." Every one of them, that's what they were afraid of. They were not afraid of the police. They're afraid of you. You know why? Because what they said is, "That guy will shoot me." That's what makes an impact on criminals. Citizens. Police officers are responders after the fact. Not putting you down if you're a cop. I love cops. I think you do an amazing job, and a very difficult job, and frankly a job I'm not qualified to do. Because I'd be fired the first week, the first time somebody did 55 miles an hour through a Walmart parking lot and almost ran a kid over, and I run them down, pull them out of the car, taser mace, and beat them with a club. That's what would happen if you gave me that kind of authority. I don't have the head for it. So I admire you. But you know better than anybody else. You can't be everywhere at all times. You have very strict rules of engagement that you have to follow. When you show up, 90% of the time, the act has already taken place and ended. It's not even in progress. Well, the victim has to wait for the cop to get there. And even when the cop gets there and catches you in the act, it's harder for a cop to justify a shooting than it is for a person in their home. If I'm in my home and you break in, it's on. I'm sorry, you shouldn't have done it. I don't know who you are. I don't know your intentions. I don't have backup. I don't have a bulletproof vest. I don't have law enforcement training. My duty is not to apprehend you. My duty is to defend myself and my family. So I'll pull the trigger quicker in that situation. And I'm more aware of the situation than the officer is. The officer coming into that situation doesn't know if the person he sees is the homeowner or the criminal. If I live in my house, and I have my wife and my son, two dogs, two cats, and you're not one of them, you're the bad guy. You don't belong there. That's why criminals fear the armed citizen. And I'm telling you, it's the duty of America's women to make rapists fear women. I'm going to give you a fact that I've heard over and over. Criminal analysis. Rape is not about sex. It's about power and intimidation. Sex is the means by which that is done. You only intimidate and overpower people that you perceive to be weaker than you. The 115-pound woman with a snub-nosed titanium frame Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum is not easy to intimidate. And it's very difficult to overpower. And for all the talk of slick Glocks and slick autos and what have you, a woman at close range, close enough to touch, with that snub-nosed 38, you try to take that pistol out of her hand, and on your best day, you lose fingers. It's not going to happen. And I can have all the gun guys disagree with me. Go try it. Go take a weapon, make sure it's clear, give it to a woman, try to take it out of her hand. Tell her to pull the trigger. Whatever she thinks she needs to. When she pulls the trigger, everybody freeze. Look where your fingers are. Tell me you'd still hold on to the weapon. And I know if you're some Krav Maga expert or something, but see, the thing is, we always talk about that expert in like 20 years of martial arts. Those guys aren't the ones out committing crimes. Those guys have discipline. a sense of responsibility, a sense of duty. You can't become a highly skilled martial artist. You really can't, and be a criminal. I guess it happens one in a million times. Somebody's going to send me an article about some guy that did it. I understand that. But the real masters, they have the patience to learn at that level. Unless something goes wrong and becomes a stressor trigger and pushes them into crime, they have too much patience to be criminals in the first place. Criminals don't have patience. They want what they want, and they want to take it now. So women, I'm telling you, even if it's not the titanium frame Smith at $600, you know what? Rossi makes a damn good little small frame revolver, 38 special, about $200. Get your license, get trained, get at least that. I recommend you qualify with a semi-auto, though. Because in some states, if you qualify with a revolver, you can't carry a semi-auto. Texas does that. It makes no sense to me. A license should be a license should be a license. But there's nothing wrong with carrying that weapon. Small, compact, light, hard to be disarmed from. People can say whatever they want about a good side picture. James Yeager and all, I disagree about this. If you're close enough to touch me, I don't need to put the sights between me and you. I need to point at you, pull the trigger, and that's it. And I need to pull the trigger at least twice. We just watched Zombieland last night. Always double tap. But I'm being serious with this. I'm not trying to make this funny. I'm not trying to paint irony here. I'm telling you, 100,000 women a year, at least, in this country are raped. And armed women is the solution. It is the only solution. There is no other solution. Law enforcement isn't going to fix it. They can't. They can put the guys that do it, once they catch them and prove they do it, in jail for a while until they get out again. And hopefully, after going to jail for it or prison for it, they don't do it again because they didn't like the experience. But that's it. If law enforcement could fix it, we wouldn't still have 100,000 a year or more women being raped in our country. Right? So we've tried that route. Again, I'm not putting down law enforcement. I'm not putting down the prosecutors. I'm not putting down the women that it happened to. I'm not putting anybody down. I'm just saying, let's be honest, it doesn't work. Just like we would say, if you watch your stove burner heat up, stick your hand on it and it burns you, it doesn't work, stop doing it. Try a different solution. Put the pot on it. Don't touch the burner, right? Well, we've been getting burned as victims, at least the women of this country have, for hundreds of years. The only solution is a gun. Safety, again, I want to reiterate safety. If you have a concealed carry permit, license, again, depending on what state you are, what they call it. And I think everybody actually calls it a license. I don't know why that word stuck in my head. Maybe because we used to have to get what was called a pistol permit in Pennsylvania before the days of concealed carry there. If you are that person, you inherently are safe. I want people that have this vision of, like, all these, like, reckless armed drunk people running around with guns to understand what you have to do to get your license in the first place, what you become aware of. It's actually more difficult to justify a shot if you're a concealed carry holder than if you're not a concealed carry holder, because it's presumed that you know the law in full. And you had a series of rules of engagement to follow, and did you follow them or not? The people that carry are inherently safe. They're aware of what they're doing. And they've done it for a reason. And I'll say everybody should do it. Everybody. And if you're a wife of a husband that's telling you this, and you don't believe him, believe me. Because I'm not saying it so that you'll let me do it, because my wife doesn't have a problem with it. She thinks it's a great idea. I'm telling you because I've examined the threats that are out there. And I want to finish up today as I explain to you why the threat is real to you. We talk about threat probability on this show an awful lot. You know, it's a lot less likely a meteor will hit the earth than you'll lose your job or lose your spouse to sickness, disease, illness, a car wreck. It's a lot more likely that your home will be damaged from a localized weather event than global climate change will create a new ice age. Just fundamental realities. Well, what came out of that? Well, and that's not original to me. That's something that's been understood. Threat probability is a very, very old concept. But when I analyzed that, when I came up with a fundamental truth, the greater the number of people affected by a disaster, the lower its overall probability of occurrence at any one point in time. The lesser number of people in the threat probability matrix affected, in other words, if it affects you and the neighbors around you, it's much more probable than something that affects your entire city. Okay? If it affects you as an individual and not your neighbor, it's more probable than the thing that affects your neighbor. And it's a constant. You can look at it. You can try to make some exceptions to it. But in reality, you'll find it is a constant. You carry a weapon primarily for things that affect you as an individual or you happen to be in an area where they're affecting someone else as an individual, as a defender. That means you carry a weapon for the most probable disaster, for the most probable emergencies. Last but not least, we talk about being prepared everywhere we go. Bug out bag in the car, documentation in the car. We talk about having everyday carry. We talk about all these things. Well, I want you to really grasp this. If you're not carrying, that means you have a tool that is useful during dangerous situations and emergencies that you do not always have access to. So the tool's useful, but it doesn't help you because you don't have it, because you're 20 miles across town, and it's locked in your gun safe upstairs. When you carry, you ensure that the tool is available when the most probable likelihood that you'll need it comes to pass. And this is my final thought for you. Whether you're the woman that someday is attacked by a piece of scum, whether you're the person that's in a crowded room that's attacked by a wild gunman, whether you're the person that sees two guys beating up somebody in a parking lot, or any other scenario that you can come up with. If you own a weapon, and you had the ability to carry, and you chose not to, and you came across that person in need, and you were unable to help because you were not carrying, you will carry that fact and the guilt that comes with it with you for the rest of your life. And even if the odds are 1 in 1,000 that it'll ever happen, those odds are too high for me to live with that regret. So I think it's inherent upon all of us to really understand what we're talking about here. We're talking about a constitutionally protected right, not a constitutionally given right. It is a right seen by our foundational law to have come to us as human beings from our Creator. The end. Done. It doesn't matter what name you call that Creator by. That's the reason they use the word Creator, because even if you're an evolutionist, then the evolution is the Creator. You see? You see the wisdom of our founders? You see how smart these people were? There's no way around that. If the right comes from your Creator, you exist. Therefore, you were created by something, some entity, or some process. If the right is inherent to that creation, then it shall not be infringed. And the people is us. Will you protect that right by exercising it? You protect your fellow citizens when you exercise that right. Your primary responsibility, once you're carrying, is to defend the people around you, because it's the most likely thing that you'll be able to do successfully. Take those two things very, very seriously. This has been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life when times get tough, or even if they don't.
You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.